My name is Max.
My name is Yuri Lowenthal. Speaking here is Travis Sintel. And you are awaited.
You are awaited. Besides being a lovely turn of phrase, is a Mad Max Fury Road podcast where Yuri Lowenthal,
that's me,
a member of Clan Diaper Panther, and Travis Sintel, that's me, member of Clan Nurse Tiger, watch 4 minutes at a time of the film Mad Max Fury Road, and then we spend, you know, a little bit of time discussing the philosophical, artistic, and emotional elements of the film until we feel like we've done a good job. Until we feel like, you know what, we've explicated this film nicely to our rabid and devoted cadre of listeners.
We are down to the last half hour.
This makes me very sad.
I don't know what to do with that.
This is 1 hour, 32 minutes in, guys, is where we end today's episode. Right now, though, you know what, Yuri?
What, Travis?
Right now, we're only an hour 28 in. By the end of the episode, we'll be over.
We'll be...
Let's embrace. About halfway through this episode, we get to
that last quarter of the film. Yeah. How do we make this podcast last longer?
How do I live without
this podcast?
Right. I don't know. I don't know what to do.
I don't.
I do know that we have.
I might just eat a bullet at the end of our last.
Jesus
episode.
Christ! That's so dark.
Well,
that took a turn.
Escalated.
Yeah,
quickly.
I was thinking maybe I just, you know, watch more Game of Thrones or something with all my new free time.
Right.
That I don't know.
Or any Game of Thrones in your case.
No, I've started.
Oh, you started.
I started.
For the longest time because you're a book guy.
I'm a book guy. I read the books. Here's what happened though. I didn't have HBO and I started watching a show called The Night Of, which is really great.
I started watching it.
And I got HBO.
Nothing more nerve-wracking than that first episode. Oh my god. Every moment was like, no.
So tense. No! Don't do that thing.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched it, please watch it. But I've got HBO Go. Or HBO Now, whatever.
Yeah,
to watch that. And I was like, well, I have access to Game of Thrones. Why don't I watch it? So I'm up to season 4.
Well, that was fast.
I had a lot of free time, Yuri. I'm not writing a lot right now. I don't think we should rub it in.
Have you been enjoying it? Because you've stayed away from it.
Yeah, I have. It's fine.
Okay.
Like, I think the books are better. I think...
I'm sure they have more leeway to do more.
Yeah, a couple of the characters... I feel like are cast in a weird way. Dario Naharis is not at all as described in the book. He's got a blue beard in the book, and he's a swaggering pirate type character. In the show, he's like, depending on which season you're in, a swaggering pretty boy with long flowing hair, who then is recast season 4 as like a bearded dude with a weird face.
Okay.
This is a Mad Max Fury Road podcast. This is,
in which we talk about Game of Thrones.
Right. So, this is your.
I'm eating popcorn. Sorry, that's that sound. We had to. We're batching today. So this is three. Should I not let them peek behind the veil?
You do every time.
Okay.
I would have never done it. They should, as far as they should understand. They
meet every week.
You people listening, meaning we get together every week and we do this. And some
we don't live lives that would support that.
Yeah. So some days we get together, we do a couple, and we leak them out over time. Which served us well last month when we didn't meet up at all last month.
That's true.
Because we were, in different places geographically.
Literally all over the world.
Yeah, I was in Lisbon and he was...
To coerce Travis into staying for a third episode today, I had to break out the Arrogant Bastard Ale from Stone Brewing, which we are not sponsored by, but I love them so much for that.
Y'all, we drinking and eating popcorn.
Y'all, we drinking and eating popcorn. I'm in his beans. Okay.
This is back to Action Town.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, this is okay. We've had our break.
Let me ask you a question as way of introduction to this 4 minute sequence. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I said five minutes. I don't know what.
What the fuck is happening?
Popcorn.
You just have a stroke.
Yeah,
he's drunk.
It smells like toast. The unknowing.
I see what you did there.
A stroke joke.
Wow.
Different.
This is usually when we do a couple of these and we get really sort of punchy.
Well, I was gonna say different jokes for different strokes.
It just keeps.
I can't stop.
The
can't
fun
stop,
never
won't
stops.
Stop.
The fun can't stop. Won't stop.
The fun's about to start right now because I, as means of introduction, when the drums kicked in and the action started again, I felt like I hadn't seen action in months because of the sections we've been in. Mm-hmm. And it got me fucking amped.
Yeah.
Did you have that same reaction?
Yeah.
Like, it's been a while, right?
I missed those drums.
It's been a while. Like, it really feels like it's been a couple, over a month at least, right? Since we like saw an action sequence.
Yeah, the last one ostensibly like was the bullet farmer, but that's like a partial act. That's not like a
It's not off screen.
It's not an action set piece.
No, it happens off screen too. It's a chase. Yeah, it's been a while. It's been for us, I mean,
ever since they hit night, really.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, for us, it's been a long, long time since we do 4 minutes at a time of Mad Max Fury Road. Anyway, we'll get to it, but just know that there's a lot of action talk coming up, and it's good to be back is all I have to say about that. It's good to be back in Action Town.
I love that we ended on this. This is a great freeze frame of Slit on the hood of the double-fisting it with the putting the gasoline in. This is a thing that I should have looked up before.
Well, let's get into it because I have a lot of questions about the mechanics of this also. But let's
somebody who knows about cars will hopefully explain.
Let's start at the top of this and work our way up to this because there's a lot of dope shit happening.
Okay. So it's the second half of sort of Max convincing them that his plan is the best.
Yeah, and this is laden with. I kind of wish we would have been able to do this in the last sequence.
Well, let's do it now.
Yeah, because it's part of the last sequence really before we get into this action town, but. It's wrapping up all the metaphors that we talked about in the last two episodes.
Wrap those metaphors up while I drink.
Okay. Great. You arrogant
Glug.
Bastard.
Glug.
So it's your drinking is so noisy and carefully formed linguistically. It's about redemption and hope. So basically, Max is finishing his argument saying we should go back there. The older woman who Yuri is nicknamed Old Bony. Still makes me laugh. Old Boney is like, yeah! We gotta name all the older women. We should have done it before the sequence so we can talk about them as they go. So Old Boney is like, this is a good idea. She straight up says, I like this idea. This is good. This is solid. We can go there. It's undefended. We can start over again like we did before.
And so, she seems like sort of the matriarch of that group.
I
so her voice,
right.
I think, counts for a lot.
I think you're absolutely right. And it also it does a nice job of reminding the audience that this group of women has upped their entire life, left, and started anew before. Mm-hmm. When the Green Place died, they moved.
Right.
And she says, we could start over again. Mm-hmm. I love that idea that women who have been through what they've been through, of the age that they are at, mm-hmm. are able to say, because that is the most hopeful thing you can say. We'll start over again. We'll do it again.
Yeah.
It's full of hope. And I think, I forget who says it, but someone says that sounds like hope. I think, Nux.
Nux says it.
Yeah, that sounds like hope. There's a great moment where...
And smells like Teen Spirit.
Smells like Teen Spirit, smells like hope.
Right.
Sounds
like hope.
Sounds like
hope, smells like Teen Spirit.
Feels like Nirvana.
This is the riddle that was cut from The Hobbit. What smells like Teen Spirit, sounds like hope.
And walks on three legs in the afternoon.
Yeah, exactly.
Capable is the one who speaks up. She says, also, Nux can take us back. He's a war boy, knows the territory, and is just doing his job, which is to bring us back.
Right.
And Nux is
like... So we've got a cover, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Nux is like, sounds like hope.
Yeah.
Such a quirky, perfect turn of phrase there.
And Toast says something interesting, for once, which is that she said, you know, everybody's basically jumping on and saying, yeah, this is a good idea. And it's sort of trying to win Furiosa over.
Yeah,
and she says, you know, it's just, you know, a few whatever is left of Immortan Joe's party, and a bunch of war boys too sick to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes back to that the Half-Life war boys, that all these sort of terrifying guys.
She says war pups, doesn't she?
I think she does. Yeah.
So implying they're very very young and very very sick.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That these sort of fierce warriors, they're really not up to it. They're too sick.
Yeah, can get these
guys. They're on the other side of their half-life.
They have basically however many, eight or so. Have we counted the older women yet? The Vavolini?
No, but you counted 11 total women last time.
Yeah, but it was just on the screen, so I think maybe there's some off-screen. Anyway.
There aren't that many.
But they're hardened warriors, basically, against some untrained war pups who are sick. It's good odds for them.
Yeah.
You know, they could probably take that, take the Citadel. It's not terrible odds anyway. I don't want to say good, but... Not as bad as it could be.
Right.
So they kind of like look around. Everyone seems pretty on board with this except for Charlize Theron, who wanted to not engage with this ever again. She's looking for something new. They're like, no, the answer's been behind us. Mm-hmm. And she, more than most, knows precisely what they're facing. Even more so than Nux, I would say. She's very aware of the defenses of the Citadel, how it's arranged, who's probably still there, mm-hmm. what guy she's going to have to come into conflict with. Mm-hmm. And also she knows, probably more than Nux, the arrangement of the war parties who are still out there and how hard it's going to be to get past them.
Right.
So the reason it's put on her, I think, is that she's the de facto leader of the group, but also she has all the knowledge of what they're running into. Mm-hmm. And she's like, it's kind of like a cheesy, but it makes me happy and swells my heart every time. Mad Max sticks his hand out, mm-hmm. And she like is...
Well, she's still sort of on the fence. Like, mm-hmm. they have to win Furiosa. If they don't win, if they're all for it and Furiosa is not for it, I don't think they go.
Yeah, I agree.
And then at the last moment, emotional
manipulation.
Mm-hmm. He says, maybe if we do this, you can get that redemption. Remember that thing you said that was the most important thing to you? If we do this my way, maybe you get that thing. And she's like, oh, fuck. Like, it's almost like she's like,
you're right.
Fuck, yeah, I can't believe you used that against me. You know, I can't believe you brought that up. Mm. Because there's no way she can say no to that. And then he holds his arm out and they do that sort of action movie bro.
What's that Predator shake?
It's the Predator shake. Yeah. And it's totally a bro thing, but it's a man and a woman, which is
great. Also very satisfying. Let's do it right now.
Okay, ready?
Fuck.
Wait, hold on, one time.
That was it. That wasn't a high five, guys.
That was a Predator shake.
But that's what they do. It's very satisfying.
You know what's almost as good as that? Hmm. Is the Good Journey fantasy handshake.
I don't know
which is this. Sort of come in like we're doing it. Ready?
Yeah. Oh, that one. Yeah,
that's where you grab
forearms.
You slap and grab forearms.
Oh, it's strong.
It's so manly.
I like it.
So
fucking manly. I like it.
You can let go now.
Sorry.
You can still. Nope. All right, we're going to be doing the rest of the podcast.
arm in arm. Well, that way I can gauge his blood pressure and pulse, and I can know how he's responding to what I'm saying in terms of pulse pounding action coming up.
I usually am pretty obvious about that.
yeah, you've been very subtle the whole podcast about what you like and don't like. No, but this little sequence, because it's the last bit of dialogue for quite some time, pretty much the whole film, really. There's a couple other things that happen.
Yeah, but you're right, there are no... dialogue scenes. Yeah.
It's just
the chase to the very end now.
Yeah, so what it does is it wraps up these metaphorical threads of redemption, hope, seeds. All the last episode and this episode, we're mm-hmm. closing off all the metaphorical threads of that sort of world.
Yeah.
We have a couple character metaphorical threads coming up to wrap up, but mm-hmm. This is the redemption, hope, future, seeds. You know, all those beats kind of come to fruition from the seeds.
Right, very nice.
In this little segment here, in the previous episode. So it is nice to kind of put a button on those and to sort of say, all right, well, for better or worse, we're either all going to die or we're going to take over the Citadel. So that's the ground is set, the gauntlet is thrown, and now it's like time to sort of get busy living or get busy dying.
There it
to
is.
To quote Stephen King.
That's right. Mm. I had forgotten that was Stephen King, but you're
absolutely right. Yeah, we just did Stand By Me on the other podcast. Yeah. So yeah. We went over, you know all those books from the same... All those novellas in the same book. Apt Pupil.
Oh, yeah.
Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption, and then The Body, which mm-hmm. is Stand By Me.
Yep.
Crazy.
And...
Don't know the last one.
That was a Bachman book.
Do you know the fourth one? Because we couldn't come
up with... I'm trying to think. Because there are other films have been done, but there were other... from other...
Because there's four in that book, I know that.
There are four in that book. Different Seasons was the book.
Four Seasons or this.
And
season.
I want to say
Different
that...
Different Seasons is right,
I want to say that I remember the last time I thought about that. I can't think of what the story is now. But the last time I thought about it, I was like, yeah, that's not worth a movie.
Okay. Cool.
Although you could argue, upon reading those, you could be like, I don't know that you could do a movie out of this. And brilliant movies have come from those.
Stephen King's heyday. Those are great, great things.
Yeah.
Side note, excited about the new It or not excited about the new It?
I really like the old It, and I mean, it was creepy as is. I'll see.
Okay.
I'll see. It was sort of Stranger Things was sort of, I hear that Stranger Things, which I know you haven't seen yet, but you will.
Correct.
You may have by the time this airs.
Correct about both.
Because I think you should.
I will.
It's 8 episodes. You can do it.
Netflix?
Netflix.
Okay.
A Netflix-produced original series. Mm-hmm. I heard that the two guys who did that, the Duffer Brothers, mm-hmm. Were in line to do it, didn't get it, and did this in response. So there's a lot of It in it.
I don't like the way you phrase those things.
I hated it as I said it.
But it's good that...
As soon as it left my lips,
yeah,
I
do understand what you said, so I think that's good. Okay, cool. Anyway, back to Mad Max Fury Road.
Right.
Not Stephen King. So they wrap up all his threads. Feeling pretty good.
It's not based on a Stephen King book?
Yeah.
Okay, it is. Okay.
The original title was called Insane Clown Posse.
Wow, you just wrapped up a whole bunch
of... Hence the white paint. and the Mad reference. Men.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Well, moving on. So then we hit. So they're like, bro shake,
predator shake,
and then it cuts to this amazing sequence for me.
Yeah.
And I know this divides people too. A lot of people didn't like this bit of business. For me, and it was described very. I found it fascinating to watch what the bad guys were doing when they're not immediately in conflict with the good guys.
Which is called
the monsters at mm-hmm. rest scene, mm-hmm. or the monsters at rest moment, which I had not heard it described that until somebody was describing that.
I think it's the way I've heard that phrase before. I think it's the phrase.
I believe that, yeah. And I think and the idea is you can't really understand a villain, or you really don't understand. A villain or a monster until you see it fully, you see it, what it's doing when it's not monstering.
Yeah, it's great.
I could have watched that scene
Darth
go
Vader
on for...
taking a bath, for example.
Exactly.
Which is in episode 5, I believe.
Right.
Star Wars.
And you never see that. But probably because you don't want to show any weakness to the big bad. You want it to be scary.
Also, probably a little bit of lack of imagination sometimes on the part of the writers.
I would agree. And yet, I would have watched 5 more minutes of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what are they doing? So let's pick up.
Let's break it down.
It cuts
a little
to
bit.
Morton Joe right. holding a staff, right. a ceremonial staff of some point, singing right. a ceremonial song.
Right.
What the fuck is happening?
I don't know if it's his equivalent of a humming. I don't know if it's his equivalent of a praying for a break. Mm-hmm. You know, like, please let me find these fucking guys. If it's him trying to hold it together because he's been out
God,
there with his.
Who the fuck is he praying to?
There it is.
Question mark.
Question mark. You just blew my mind.
Well, I felt your pulse go up, so I know.
You're not gonna let go.
Okay. I'm not gonna let go.
All right.
Right. So, but it's like a woodsy ceremonial chanting. Staff with yeah. like gems encrusted in this.
And I wish we'd freeze frame on that because I bet what's encrusted
sure.
in it.
Oh, sure.
Right. But much like his medals, the bottle caps, the epaulets, and the circuit boards, and the.
It is. Well, I haven't seen him hold this before. I'm sure he has. Have they introduced this before?
No, but if I think. If you go back to where he runs back, he's like, the wives, you know, and then he runs back and opens the thing and Ms. Giddy's in there. It's leaning against the wall right by the outside
you're
of
right.
that thing.
You're right.
And that's, so that was the only other
so
place we see it, I think.
Do you think Ms. Giddy was named after, like, being an old biddy?
Why didn't they name her Ms. Biddy?
It's too on the nose.
She doesn't seem particularly happy to me. Like, you know, Giddy is something like, I'm so happy that I...
Yeah, Biddy, though, is an old crone, basically. Mm-hmm. So maybe...
Old Boney.
Well, good old Boney coming up soon here in our 4-minute recap.
So he's holding this scepter.
Yeah, and kind of like chanting and sort of rocking back and forth. Very strange.
Yeah.
Everyone else is kind of like hanging out.
Everyone's chilling out.
Right. The people eater is having his gouty, gross feet done by...
Right.
Some unlucky war boy. Some poor fucking schmuck. Because mm-hmm. it's clipping his fat toenails. Mm-hmm. I mean, and listen, guys... As feet go, these are the fattest. These are the goutiest feet.
These are the, yeah. Yeah.
It's really fucked up.
Right. Everybody's taking a break. And, like, I don't know if it's, the heat of the day or whatever, and it's lunchtime.
Yeah. What are they going to do? They don't know where to go. They probably are like,
Well, here's the thing. I had never noticed this before until, once again, the scrutiny of 4 minutes at a time. At once, you know, for a while, they were that V-shaped Carmada. They were the war party. They were all the Gastown boys, they were the Bullet Farmers guys.
All together, yeah.
All together. Now, clearly, and I'd never really noticed this before, they have split up. Mm-hmm. They've clearly lost the trail.
They split up
in the swamp or whatever, and they've split up to try to find them. Mm-hmm. So, which is evidenced by, as soon as they come charging back through, they have to send up flares to call them back mm-hmm. into
like,
one big...
We're going. And they all come from different directions at that point.
Right, which I hadn't really seen before.
I agree. I had not noticed that before either.
But I love
can
that
Can I just
they...
say how fat his feet are?
We can go back to that.
Well, I just want to say, it's so perfectly fat and so funny. Mm-hmm. It's such a good, like, I would
Another
have loved
comic,
to be...
comic moment.
It's a comic moment, and I would have loved to have been in the room where they're like, how fat can we make these feet? Okay, go away, make them a little fatter, bring them back. Too fat, bring him back. Like, there was a discussion about the fatness of his feet that's mm-hmm. still believable, but also beyond the bounds of any believability. Like, there's, like, mm-hmm. this, like, nice, like, line they walk of it's clearly insane that his feet are that fat.
I would love to find out if eating human flesh makes your feet do that. Like, if somebody did the research and said, well, because of the whatever in human flesh, your feet get gouty.
I don't think that's a real thing. I'm going on record as saying that that's not a real thing.
It is for me.
Okay. If Yuri eats flesh, then his feet get gouty.
Okay.
Could we find someone?
Something I hope I never find out.
So a couple things you have to do on this podcast before it ends. One is drink mare's blood.
Okay, two, mixed with
eat
mare's milk.
Eat human flesh.
Okay.
So we had a couple things to do.
Then you know what? This podcast may last a bit longer.
Right, before it ends. Mark my words, this podcast will not end until Yuri eats a human body.
So wait, the whole body or just human flesh?
Well, human flesh. Okay. And I don't mean like the skin off your finger. I mean
oh, that's literally what I was thinking.
I know how your brain works. No, but I mean like meat. Like a sliver of...
And not my own. Because I might give up a thumb for this podcast.
Yeah, it's fine if it's your own, honestly.
A chunk of my thigh. I've got big thighs.
Yeah,
I can afford to... I mean, I could...
Eat a bit of that thunder?
I could eat a bit of that thunder and still be able to walk away, I think.
I feel nauseous from this conversation.
Drink more arrogant bastard ale.
Ow! All right, so anyway, they're sitting there, they're hanging out, we see...
And I love this moment.
It's beautiful. It's, Monsters at Rust. The bullet farmer is dead. Max fucking waxed him.
Right.
We have the people eater left, and we have Morton Joe in his little prayer stance. Mm-hmm. And we see Rictus Erectus, so we see a couple of the guys. We see Slit, you know, with guys like in the background.
Oh, do we see Slit in that?
I don't know.
Maybe. Doesn't matter.
Said that, but
we definitely see Rictus.
Soon. Yeah. So they're all hanging out. And then in the distance, you see this, like, fucking war rig zooming past. And we know from our episode with Mark Sexton that originally the idea for this was they would try to sneak around in a very tense scene. They get spotted by what we now understand is one of the lookout posts because the team is all split up. Mm-hmm. Then they have to zoom towards the guys, try to zoom past them once they're spotted. Super great
spotted
idea.
Spotted by Polecat, which remained in it because that's the guy who sees them.
Yeah, super great idea. That all is great. They didn't have time for it, whatever, totally fine. But like, I love that idea, and I think it's very, very playable, very doable.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little questionable, now that Mark points it out, the way it's cut, which is they're just zooming in. Okay.
Yeah, like they didn't see them from miles away. Like, literally, as soon as they're on them.
Yeah.
It's like the scene in Holy Grail, where, they're charging, where Arthur's charging the front, and it... It's just a weird sort of funny thing that only Monty Python would think of, where the guards are looking at them charging off in the distance.
Yeah.
And then you cut back to the guards sort of looking. And then you cut back, and they haven't gotten any closer.
Yeah.
They're back to the beginning, and they're charging the same moment. And the guards look at each other. And then you cut back, and they're still, the same thing. And it cuts back to the guards, and all of a sudden they're there.
Yeah, right.
it's a trick. Yeah. So that's how they did it.
Yeah, so... they're zooming in. The way they've chosen to do this, which I think is, again, they've cut around this moment in terms of the discussion, but the war rig is loaded up with people, and next to the war rig is a motorcycle with two women on it, two of the Vavolini, which I think strategically makes a lot of sense. I wonder if it's more like, we can be a lookout car, this is the way we do it, or if it's like, we should take a motorcycle, or if it's... We wouldn't all fit in the war rig. There's a lot of options as to how that conversation may have happened. But I think having...
I think they could have crammed them all into the war rig.
It makes sense
I think that one...
A mobile...
member of the Vivolini said, I'm such a badass on this bike.
Yeah.
You guys, we need that flexibility.
We need the flexibility. I got a sniper on my back here. You'll come off and we'll zoom around and take care of some people who may attack us. Whatever.
Right.
It's smart. I think it's smart. Yeah. So you see a war rig and a motorcycle zooming past. And the lookout's like, that's the war rig. That's the war rig. That's them. And then Morton Joe spells it out. They're heading back to the Citadel. They know it's undefended.
And Rictus is, of course, like, Dad!
Completely confused. Rictus doesn't know what's going on.
Dad, it's the war rig. Dad, is it the war rig? Dad!
He doesn't know what's going on right now, which is so cute.
Why would they do that? Dad!
That doesn't make sense.
Nothing makes sense to you, Rictus.
Poor Rictus. He's
very cute.
Not wearing his mask this time.
Oh, you're right.
What's up with that? Also, I don't mean to be a stickler about these types of things, but I'm going to.
Do it.
Rictus has a very specific facial hair pattern. He's cut. Right?
Does he?
Yeah.
I'll buy that.
When did he have time to shave that? Or maintain that?
Maybe it was from wearing that mask for so long. Maybe he didn't shave it. Maybe it just sort of...
Oh, interesting. Okay, maybe.
I don't know. But that reminds me that there's a great... attention to detail thing. There's a lot of good close-ups of Max's head when he's talking to Furiosa and trying to convince her.
Yeah.
And his haircut is so fucked up.
Yeah.
because when they were shaving his head and he breaks free,
yeah,
they were in the middle of cutting. And so there's like this weird hair that's left like right above his ear,
right,
that is not flattering at all. And his hair's all like fucked up and jagged and back, like super, cowlick.
Yeah.
Most actors, I'm sure, would have said, yeah, you can't. No, I'm not going to stand
it's
for that.
It's fucking Tom Hardy.
Yeah. But it's fucking Tom
Hardy.
He played
Bronson.
He's like,
give a shit.
Right?
There are moments of Bane in this Mad Max performance, too.
Oh, sure. And a lot of people have come down on him for that.
No, oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, they're like, it's the Bane voice. Why don't you just, strawberries.
What are you doing?
With fiber.
Let's go to the Citadel.
Have you seen the Oral Knots thing? I'm going to play it for you afterwards.
No.
It's the best.
That's funny.
You guys know what I'm talking about.
We
you
should
guys are
go
internet
to
people.
The Citadel.
Drop a beat.
160 days in the desert. You'll never survive. Was raised in the darkness.
That's good.
Thanks, Jerry. Jerry's a professional voiceover artist. He just said I did a good job. So fuck y'all, motherfuckers. I'm killing this shit. The drums start beating around this point.
I love it when they finally realize and they're like, shit.
Hey, we forgot this funny shot of the Dew 4 here sleeping.
Oh, yeah, I love it. It flies. So literally, you hear flies buzzing. And he's asleep in his sling.
He's just laying with a guitar over him, suspended by like four or five elastic bits.
We can't think about it. He's got to be exhausted.
He plays a guitar.
That guy has to play all the time unless they're stopped. This is his
only
downtime.
Also, they never let him down. He sleeps in the fucking sling. It's so funny. So, we see all the people. We
see
the major players.
We gotta get Iota on the podcast.
Please. Guys, we're now into getting new guests, so
we are
grasping
emboldened.
At straws.
We are emboldened by the fact that Mark Sexton has been on our show, and we're looking for more people who worked on the film.
Yeah, that's what we're. That's
plus, it allows us to stall the death
end
of
this
podcast. Yeah.
Yes, if you know people.
So if anybody's got any contacts, throw them a line and say, hey, these guys would love it if you were on the show. We can Skype.
You
can
just
Skype
make people happy. Wherever you are in the world, whatever time you want to do it, we'll make it work. Mm-hmm. But we see all the monsters at rest. So I forgot that we also saw Dew 4 here. So basically, this does two things.
Thank
one,
you
it's funny. Two, monsters at rest. Three, it's the only chance the movie has to reintroduce us to these people we haven't seen in a while.
Right.
It's reminding us, like, hey, these are the major players.
Right.
Because they're about to come into fucking play in a second.
Right.
So...
And it gives us the comic beat of the Dew 4-year suddenly trying to, fire up his acting.
Oh, shit. Sleeping again. I gotta get my guitar tuned up. Like, I didn't have time to tune my guitar, you guys. Come on, you guys. So he, scrambles up, gets his guitar. But the drums kick in. They spot the war rig. They're off and running. Shit gets pulse pounding. Everyone's into it at this point. We're like, okay, guys, let's go. Everyone's running back to their cars. Two war boys or three war boys lift the people eater up into his goddamn big car.
His fat-ass feet. Ass, yeah.
Everyone's getting ready. And in a delightfully campy performance, I would say, the people eater's like, he says something fucking funny. What was it? Why do they turn around?
Or what is it? He's like, ah, yeah, he's like...
He says
like,
a funny thing there.
I forget what it is.
Yeah, but it's like this campy... He's a campy performer. It's funny. It's like a good way for it to be. Because he's got the fucking nipples cut out of his suit, and he's just running around with his pierced nipples.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's like, he says some campy shit, like surprised that they've turned around or something.
Yeah.
Gets in his car. Everyone's returning to their vehicles to get ready to give pursuit. And then the flares get fired. We get two iconic Mad Max Fury Road shots here. One is a completely empty landscape, beautiful sandy landscape, war rig right in the center of it, motorcycle next to it, barreling towards camera. Classic George Miller.
Flying into it, and then over it.
Yeah, perfect. And then we see the Carmadas coming down from the dunes behind them in chase. And then we have this other shot, which is you see the war rig from further out. And then you have the other things giving chase. And then right past the camera, you see a group of cars spiral down this mountain.
Right.
And just kind of down the dune towards the war rig. So two classic sort of things we've seen before. But it's also really cleverly, I think, reintroducing us into this action sequence feel. We've been out of it for a second.
Shit is about to get fucked up.
We're about to really, really do it. Thirdly, it really establishes the danger to the war rig because there's a fuck ton of cars coming towards them.
Right.
So we have all these different tribes that have been out and about, sort of scouting. And
right,
sort
we may
separated.
Have sort of forgotten exactly what the length and breadth of this threat was. And they're like, oh yeah, we should go back through. And us as viewers are going, that must, a lot of they knocked a lot of them off on the way, but there couldn't be that many left. And now we're like, oh,
holy
shit.
We're in big trouble. It really sets the threat up nicely about what's coming up here. So Warwick's going. They're shooting all. And then we cut back to the internal inside of the war rig, where the Dag is doing this beautiful little series of hand gestures over and over again.
Show off her cool finger tattoos.
She's just dope. She's so great, and she's doing this weird shit that's so in character. Well, I don't think I want to meet her. I just think the character's great. I'm sure the actress is not nearly as interesting.
I'd like to introduce you to her so that we can test that theory.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
If any of you guys know.
Yeah, anyway. Sure. But she's
it's
doing
the internet, dude.
Yeah, it's true. She's doing this cool series of hand gestures, and then Dopey McGee's like, what are you doing? Yep. And the Dag's like, I'm praying. To who? Mm-hmm. Whoever's listening.
Yeah.
Great. So, I mean, this basically establishes... And this is like a throwaway joke line, but also, this is a group of women who live in a society where their god has been abusive to them, has molested them, has raped them, and they have had basically all religion stolen from them.
Right.
So it's actually a really fucking weighty line, I would argue. That it feels like a joke line, but it's also like, whoever's listening is who I'm praying to. Because the concept of God has been stolen from these women.
Right.
Like, they don't have anything to... rest on. She doesn't know who the fuck she's praying to, but she knows
she's also the crazy one who hears voices and sees things.
Yeah,
we've established.
Yeah, it's a perfect pairing of line with character.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's a great moment.
She was
there.
The one to deliver that line.
For
sure.
But also, if you think about what that line means, it's pretty weighty. It's pretty deep. Mm-hmm. And pretty interesting, I would say. Of course, Zoe Kravitz doesn't understand it.
And back to hope.
Yeah, exactly.
It shows hope and faith of some sort.
Hope and faith. Exactly right. Yeah. So they're off and running. They're in the war rig. We establish all that stuff. And then, from Tom Hardy's perspective, we see all these flares going off to the left and the right of the war rig.
Right.
And not just behind them, even with them, slightly ahead of them.
Right.
It all of a sudden feels very, very, very dangerous.
And now it's interesting. It is a chase, but it's a race.
Yeah. It's a chase race.
It's a chase race.
Trace.
It's a trace.
Trace is already a word.
You just made up a word that's already a word to describe
something different.
Some words that don't go together.
But no, it's they're floored. They've got it floored. And what pulls up alongside the war rig, Yuri?
Slit and the interceptor. The last of the interceptors.
The interceptor and Max.
Max's interceptor.
Hey, that's mine.
He will not let go of that, which is great because. That car has meant everything to him in the past. You know?
But also they fucking warboarded it out. There's a skull on
the engine. Well, what did they do? It used to be black and now it's chrome.
Yeah, they've chromed it. You're right. The engine is ripping up there, and there's a nice little skull on it, and it's pretty warboarded out.
Yeah. And I don't know. Again, I don't know anything about massive engines other than if you sort of put that supercharged engine thing on top of the, it just looks like it's so much more powerful.
It looks more badass, but I bet air intake wise, it's super great, right?
And cooler because it's immediately getting cooled by the air.
Yeah, so it makes sense.
All right.
I don't fucking know cars.
Yeah, I don't, because we're about to get into this thing where they start squeezing gasoline.
Right.
Into the manifold, your air intake, the intake
valve.
This
is where it's about to go way wrong. Let me do it this way.
Okay, you describe it.
Nux goes, starts to climb out the window, and Furiosa goes, don't blow my engine. He goes, I'm just going to nudge her a little bit. Now, we know he's a black thumb.
Right.
We know he can handle this. He's he's a good
mechanic.
And he's
a rev head.
Yeah.
Not a rag head. And not a rag head.
Right.
But a rev head.
He's a rev head, which makes total sense
right
when someone
time,
says it.
Right? Okay.
Then goes out with a little bit
of gas.
Liquid in a bottle. I'm just going to say all I know for sure. He's got liquid in a bottle. Mm-hmm. He puts the liquid in his mouth, and then like the tube-looking things that come off the engine, he blows the liquid, the clear liquid, into the tube-looking things, and the car goes faster.
Right, which is indicated by
that's we all see. The fuck I on know. The, what is that? What is that shit? I don't know, man.
But clearly, it's something that if you do it too much, the engine will explode.
Yeah, because it goes too fast.
Right.
Or the revs, the
because it
revs
seems
too
like
hard.
Not a place that you should put gasoline if you want.
You don't
anything
want the
good
RPMs
to
go too high; it'll bust. That part I get. That just is logic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the fucking liquid is. Is it?
It's
gasoline?
Like if this was a Fast and Furious movie, that would be nitrous, right?
Right. That I kind of get
because
the way that explodes. Yeah. Is it just gasoline? If you put it in the outtake,
you guys tell us.
I mean, I literally don't even want to guess at what the fuck is happening from a chemical perspective there.
But it's got to, this has to have some ground. This has got to be grounded in reality.
Oh, for sure it is. Like, this is something I feel like I've seen before.
Right.
But I don't know what the fuck's going on.
And I love that, I love the introduction to Slit when he comes up, he's riding on the front of the hood. which is great. So they know what he's going to try to do to get ahead of them. And they establish that they're going to try to get ahead of us to drop caltrops, the spikes to blow the tires. Now, they've also converted Max's poor interceptor into something that has one of those things in the back that drops the spikes.
It's a pimped up interceptor.
And there's great when he's pulling ahead and they cut away and they cut back and he's one of the great poses, one of the great sort of shots of the film. He's sort of, you know, hanging off the hood, you know, joy of what he's doing.
He's so happy.
He's so happy.
Yeah, these World War II.
This is Slit's moment.
Also, that interceptor really zooms past that war rig very easily.
Yeah. Well, it's a truck, and that's a
The idea that there was going to be some sort of chase sequence that they could outrun them for a while, bullshit. They catch up to them within five seconds. Just boom. Now you're swarmed. Right. So we're straight. George Miller doesn't waste time with bullshit. If we know there's going to be a battle sequence, which is that's what it feels like is going to happen. He's not wasting time fooling us, thinking they might get away. Fucking right into the battle sequence. Into the fucking catch up.
Plus, it's Slit against Nux again. Yeah, you know, there's that betrayal. He's really, you know, he hates Nux.
Yeah. Nux is blowing the liquid into the machine.
And I love that Slit, you know, has these mustard, you know, squeezers,
far
vinegar
superior.
Squeezers. And Nux is just like, fuck it, I'm just gonna siphon this with my mouth and spit it in the, which is so much more badass.
It's much more badass, but also very, very unfunctional.
Yeah, if you've ever siphoned gas before.
I have.
Have you siphoned a little too far and swallowed gas?
It's the worst.
It is the worst thing in the world. It makes you sick.
Yeah. I have a lot of friends who are fire breathers and they have the same situation.
Okay,
too. But if Slit has two squeeze bottles, he's squeezing gas or whatever that liquid is into the whatever thing he's putting it into.
Right.
I don't want to make claims about what I think it is because I don't fucking know.
We're wrong. just assume we're wrong. Continue.
I just don't know. But he's squeezing it in the engine, far superior, working better. But then he gets in this little competitive thing with Nux after he sees him, calls him a traitor, and he then starts to spray it into his own mouth. And
right.
Then,
even though he's got the things, he's like, well, I'm not going to let you show me up.
Yeah. So Slit starts in a really funny moment. Sprays the two bottles into his mouth, fills his mouth with the liquid, which we're
delicious
guessing
liquid.
Is gasoline, and then sprays three things at a time into the engines, which is both bottles in his mouth.
In his mouth, yeah.
Not efficient. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but super badass and super funny, and totally, you know, motivated character-wise by what this guy is and what he wants to do here.
Right.
So they pull up alongside.
Yeah, and Nux fucks up, chokes on some of the gas,
yep.
Which is bound to happen, because they have to swerve, because they get ahead of him and drop some spikes, so they swerve. Nux, you know, chokes some of the gas. Max is like, this is the only way we're going to stay ahead. Tags Nux out, basically, and goes out there to do it himself.
Mm-hmm. It's a pretty scary moment. They drop a lot of spikes. And Charlie Theron and some...
And one of them hits the... One of them gets in the tire.
The top, the front right tire.
Yeah.
In a pretty bit of badass driving, she swerves around most of the spikes.
Right.
One catches a tire, which out of, like, what, 8 or 10? Mm-hmm. It's not bad odds.
Also, and we forgot when Slit first pulls up, you know, in the interceptor, and Max says that's mine. They shoot at each other. I mean,
there's a lot of gun battle. Yeah.
He's hiding behind the V8, whatever. The sticking out of the, he's got this sort of natural cover. It's just a great action set piece.
Oh, you know what too? Old Boney says. Old Boney goes, and I love the line. Here we go, girls.
Right.
It's such a good line.
Yeah. Because she's not scared.
That single line subverts every fucking gender expectation of every movie ever.
Yeah.
Because Here We Go Girls is, in any other movie, would be like, it would mean
all
something
right, guys,
totally
let's
different.
Fuck shit up. Yeah,
I don't know, it's such a fun little line, I think. It's not Here We Go, it's Here We Go Girls. It's just nice. It's nice to hear it, it's nice to see it, and she starts to pop fucking shots right at Slit. And so there's a little back and forth now where there's some shouting, some firing of guns. And Max has a gun out.
Don't we see the motorcycle pull ahead of the thing and take a pot and
drive
him back behind the engine?
She's got a long, almost Native American style rifle.
Or like an old musket.
Yeah. an old musket. She's standing up on the back of this bike and firing. And what happens is the interceptor's on the right of the war rig. Mm-hmm. The motorcycle's on the left of the war rig. And occasionally, the motorcycle will pull ahead of the war rig, fire a couple shots, and drop
and
back
duck
behind.
Back. Yeah. Once again, using the war rig
so
as cover.
So smart. Like, strategically, super smart, super, true, I think, to the world and how they would sort of handle that situation. Not very effective in terms of accuracy at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But it drives Slit back behind the
keeps V8. Him from feeding the engine the way he wants to feed it, and that's cool. Slit is in Hog Heaven.
Again, yeah, this is the best day of his life.
This is Nux when we saw him before, about to die in battle. This is all he lives for. He's so excited. But even better for Slit, Slit gets to redeem himself from getting beat up by Nux before, losing Nux.
Yep.
He's the guy, Slit remembers the guy who had the boot and was super excited about having discovered something.
Right.
So he gets to conquer his old nemesis from the beginning of the film and the middle of the film. Also, he gets to be in a war, which he loves. Thirdly, he gets to get back all of Immortan Joe's shit and be a hero. And fourth, he might get to die.
Right.
That's great for him.
Right.
This dude loves fucking the possibility of dying.
Yep. Yeah. And in this freeze frame at the very end, which should be long before this posted on our Twitter site, but may not be just because we're terrible at podcasting.
Yeah. We're not very reliable at anything.
No. It's a great freeze frame, but also shows tumors in very similar place to where Nux has them, under his ear. He's got a Barry and Larry of his own.
Oh, you're right. I never clocked that before.
Yeah, well, me neither, because everything goes by
fast.
Yeah. Like I said, I'd love to just play still frame roulette with this film.
This is, by the way, check out our Twitter account, because this is a very good freeze frame.
And you are awaited. It's very easy if you have
You are awaited. On the right side of the screen, you see Max leaning over the engine, feeding some sort of liquid into some sort of mechanics. On the left side of the screen, you see two war boys in equal sort of teeth bared, fangs exposed, shouting pure, unbridled war joy as Slit feeds the engine with its delicious war juice.
delicious. It's my favorite condiment.
Delicious war juice?
Yes.
Oh, it's very good. I also love just a little bit, I mean, we already covered this, but the idea that they would use the first car that intercepts the war rig is the Interceptor. It's just so nice. It's kind of like on the nose and a little easy, but like also great. Like great.
But yeah, going back to using the things that we've already established and bringing them back over and over again rather than establish something new.
Yeah.
And giving yourself, you know, something a little payoff to the amount of, you know, attention and the time that we paid to this.
Yeah, they captured this thing. They've redone it. This is a great chance to reintroduce it. It also shows, because it's the fastest car, that Max had a pretty dope car. Max had taken care of that thing. They've souped it up even further.
And put a skull on. You know, I mean, it didn't have that when Max was doing
skulls
it.
Skulls are fast, yeah. Man.
Skulls make so it faster. Fast.
I just feel like it's so funny that these war boys are basically like 1985 Crow goth kids.
Yeah.
They're like, that's as far as I've gotten. Skulls are super cool. Jinkos are cool. Chain jeans, love that.
You know? Are you? Do you guys have The Crow in your list of movies to?
Oh, we must. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sure. Does your favorite movie suck?
Is another great movie that podcast. You do.
Yeah, check it out at DYFM suck, because Twitter has limitations on how long your username can be.
Oh, I get it.
At DYFM suck.
At you are a way to just barely fit.
Yeah, and Yuri Lowenthal certainly did not fit.
Barely.
Yeah. Okay, so
is that, I mean, is that...
I think that's pretty much it, right? So this is the intro to the sequence. This is setting up all the players. This is...
Once again, we sort of cut it off, and I mean, it doesn't really
cut. But the next three episodes, I think, are basically this sequence, if I'm not mistaken.
At least, yeah.
But here, instantly, we have the reintroduction of all the characters from the film. Right. We've seen Rictus Rectus, we've seen Immortan Joe, we've seen the People Eater, Slit is back, he's reconnected with Nux... you know, we have all the things in play now. And
we've
now
seen
it's a matter
the Polecats, but now we'll really get to see the Polecats at work.
Oh, there's some good sequences coming up. But it's a matter now of George Miller has once again reassembled all the pieces on the chessboard, and now we're going to watch the game unfold.
Yeah.
So this is kind of where we're at now, where all the things are introduced. We haven't seen a master wide shot yet of the whole scene, but I, for one, have a very good grasp of where everybody is.
Yeah.
Which is kind of remarkable without a wide shot.
Yeah.
That... all the groups have kind of come in and funneled into this like cavern.
Mm-hmm. Right. Chasm.
Right.
Or valley.
Valley is probably the better word. Mm-hmm. They're all in a valley, and they're zooming towards that initial valley where the Motogoats came.
Headed back for that terrain.
Mark Sexton didn't call them the Motogoats.
No, he had like a real name.
Yeah,
name that I'm sure that they called them.
Oh, no doubt. But he said it as if it was common knowledge. And I was like, I wanted to correct him and be like, Mark Sexton, those are called Motogoats.
Those are called the Jamuskin Raider Motogoats.
Jamuskin Raider Motogoats.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Get your facts straight. but yeah, heading back to that's the goal. We understand now as an audience very simply where we're going, how we expect to get there, and what the obstacles are. And now it's pure, unbridled joy of watching that sequence unfold and watching them conquer obstacle after obstacle after obstacle.
And wondering at this point, hey, we've already seen this. How is George Miller going to up the stakes or to make it different enough for us to keep our attention?
Is he wearing hiking boots?
He's wearing some sort of good.
I really want to know more about these pants. I mean, oh, you know what? Has he strapped himself into the engine in any way? What is that thing on his left leg?
He's got to have, at the very least, for the stunt, to keep the stunt safe.
But I mean, in the world,
he's
got to
be strapped to.
Right, but in the world, like, is
it? I don't think he's strapped because he's all sprawled out across the. I think it looks a lot more badass
if he's not strapped.
When he's yeah.
But I was thinking maybe that's an excuse for having all those loops and chains on the pants. Is if they're working on something, they clip in. Like a carabiner, like clip into the engine or something if they're doing a thing?
No, but not in that world, I don't think, because your pants would just tear off if you fell. I mean, it wouldn't hold you onto them.
Yeah. Is it just supposed to be cool?
I just can't stop staring at Slit.
I mean, the.
Wow, that was a
gross sentence. but I just want to, before this movie ends and before this podcast ends, I want to sort of crack the mystery of these
pants,
War Boy pants. I don't think we've gotten any further on that as this has gone on.
My name is Yuri Lowenthal.
My name is Travis Sintel.
And you are awaited.